Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Radio.
Okay, hold on 1 second.
What is going on? Ron, hang up. You and I'll have our own show. I'll call you back.
Well, good evening and welcome to the man's voice here on this pleasant Sunday afternoon. We're glad to have you here with us as we move along. I don't know what kind of show it is, but some of my panelists are being grumpy and off the chain tonight, so it should be a very good
off
show.
Off the chain.
Yeah. I'd like to welcome them to the show. I hope everyone has been enjoyed your Father's Day. Did you do anything special, Bruce, on Father's Day?
Yes, I spent it with my kids. We had huge steaks on the grill and corn, and we had an absolutely gorgeous weather up here. Couldn't have been nicer. With my grandkids running around, it was fun.
Well, great. Great. I see, Mr. Wiggins, how was your Father's Day?
Father's Day was awesome. I spent it with the children. My children, my grandkids. It was an awesome day.
All right. Well,
I couldn't hear him, by the way.
I know.
Aren't you?
There you go. Don, you're a little muted. I don't know if you could come up a little bit or something. Turn up your mic a little bit.
He's off.
But anyway.
Okay, is that better?
Well, that's
no.
A lot better. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Tell me one of those things. To the show.
Oh, my God. Bruce has been drinking Red Bull or something.
I am high on life.
Oh, there we go. Gentlemen, let's get into the show, though. One of the things that we talked about last week was all that's going on, and we talked about police. Of course, there were officers listening, obviously, so I did get a couple of notes about a lot of them kind of agreed with what I was talking about, and a lot of them, thought that it was interesting. But I want to listen. I want you to listen to it. I'm going to play a snippet, and I want you to listen to it, and then we'll talk right after it's finished. And it is from one of the police unions, and this is the union leader. I want you to listen to what he's saying.
When I read in the papers, that in the black community, mothers are worried about their children getting home from school without being killed by a cop. What world are we living in? That doesn't happen. It does not happen. Good afternoon. My name is Michael Mill. Yay. Bill State Association of EPA. And I just want to talk to you, Brett, and I want to talk to the police officer. 375 million interactions with the public every year. 375 million interactions. Overwhelmingly positive responses. Overwhelmingly positive responses. But I read in the papers all week, we all read the papers, that in the black community, mothers are worried about their children getting home from school without being killed by a cop. What world are we living in? That doesn't happen. here today to say we've been left out of the conversation. We've been vilified. It's disgusting. It's disgusting. Trying to make us embarrassed of our profession. 375 million interactions. Overwhelmingly positive. Nobody talks about all the police officers that were killed in the last week in the United States of America, and there were a number of them. We don't condone Minneapolis. We roundly reject what he did as disgusting. Disgusting. It's not what we do. It's how the police officers do. Our legislators abandoned us. The truth is vilifying us. Well, you know what, guys? I'm proud to be a cop. And I'm going to continue to be proud to be a cop until the day I retire. And that's all I have.
All right. Don, what do you think about that speech?
David, I really couldn't hear it very well, but I could really hear the spirit of that speech. And I said before that we're having problems with the police unions across the country, and that's the real issue. It's a private club that they protect their own. It's a blue silence, and we need to have reform in the police department, not dismantle. We don't need to dismantle the police department, but there are some issues and different programs that we need to dismantle, like all of the health care issues, all of the mental health issues. The police doesn't need to go to a home when we got a mentally ill person there with a gun. I mean, that's a office or a recipe for disaster. But what I did hear, and I want you to tell us what we would have heard if we could have heard that very clear, but I heard the spirit. It was a very angry spirit that I heard. And I'm going to rest with that, David.
All right. Bruce, did you hear much of it? And if you can tell us what your thoughts are.
Yes, and I've heard his speech before. It's been on TV several times over the last week, so I got most of it from that. And Don is right in some ways. I don't see it as angry since I saw it personally on the TV. I saw it as he was very almost emotional about it, that, you know, hey, guys, we're here. You've all agreed, everybody, brain around the country agrees that it is a small minority of police officers that are bad. And as some have said over and over, and I agree, we need to have reform to fix that. And yes, Don's right. One of the big things is breaking into the stranglehold, no pun intended there, that the unions sometimes have to protect their own. But when that first started, they had reason to protect their own. Now, there does need to be reform so we can eliminate the bad cops, unfortunately paint all the good ones with a bad brush. So definitely that needs to happen. But since we say over and over and over again that so many cops are good cops and we're not talking about them, well, let's talk about them. Let's figure out a way to do this the right way, not defame all the police, not call them murderers or fry them like bacon and every other cockamamie phrase that they use that is unwarranted if you're talking about far more than the majority are good and a small minority are bad. So I feel very strongly that we don't want to talk about solving the problem right now. We just want to hash over this problem over and over again. Too many politicians want to keep this as an issue instead of coming out with a solution.
David, can I weigh in on that? This is Michael. Can I weigh in on that?
Yeah, let Don speak first, and then you'll come in, Michael. Go ahead, Don.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, I'm going to yield to you in a moment. But But you've heard me say many times that America has a heart problem. And that's exactly what I'm saying now. We have good white cops, and we have some bad white cops. We have some good black cops, and we have some bad black cops. But it's the heart that we got to fix in America. America never dealt with the heart problem. We've had this pandemic thrust upon us, and I think God slowed the world down so we can look at things in a realistic way.
All right, Michael. Michael, you had a comment?
Yeah, I did. I saw that speech, too, several times. It was hard to hear when you were playing it, but I saw it several times on TV, so I'm very familiar with that speech. And what I saw when I saw that speech, because he was surrounded by a lot of his colleagues and friends, what everyone else saw as a union rally, I saw as a KKK rally. That's what it looked like to me. And that's what the speech sounded like to me. Because what he's saying is that if you don't let us do our job, meaning if you don't let us kill black people, then we're going to just stop going to work and we're going to strike. Please stop yelling at us for killing black people. That's what I heard him say. And basically that's what he was saying in a dog whistle sort of way. So for you to say, Bruce, you said that a small majority of the police officers is bad. That's not true. It's a lot of bad police officers. It's not a very small percentage. The entire organization is bad and founded on racism. So you can't say that, oh, it's just a small percentage of them. Because throughout my entire life, I never had a good interaction with a police officer, and I'm in my 40s. And I've had thousands of interactions with police officers in my life, and not one was ever good. And if you poll 45 million black people in this country, I guarantee you about 80% of them would agree with me and say they've never had a good interaction with a police officer.
Then, Michael, why would so many people that live in city environments of all ethnic and financial criteria, poor, rich, city people, want the police around? I guarantee you, if we take erase that thin blue line and we have no police, none, you can just imagine what's going to happen. People really think I can do whatever I want because no one's gonna reprimand me. That's
no,
anarchy.
Bruce,
that's
Bruce,
crazy.
Bruce, please hear me out on this. In the black community, we see the police as an occupying force. We don't see them as there to protect and serve. In the black community in the ghettos where I grew up at, all we would see was big white boys with guns coming to our community to oppress us. That's how we saw it, and that's how they saw it. So in the black community, we don't see it the way you see it in the white community. Of course, you see them as, hey, this guy's here to help me out if someone breaks in my house. We see it as if somebody breaks in my house and I call these guys, they're probably going to see if I got a warrant and try to take me to jail too. So therefore, I'm not going to even call them.
Well,
so
Michael,
Bruce,
Michael,
you don't see the police the same way we see it. We see
Michael,
it differently,
I absolutely can't see it the way you do. I can't see it through a black man's eyes and his experience. You're exactly right. However, you can't paint the entire African-American nation as they're all a bunch of assholes either. You're speaking for yourself and your own experiences. I worked since the 60s in the middle of the ghetto and with many, many black friends throughout the riots and everything. So that's the closest I could get to understanding it. But I got a much better picture than most. And even then and even now, a lot of the minority group welcome the police. They don't see it as you see it. I understand what you're saying, and I'm not saying you don't feel that way. I can hear it in your voice. But for you to say that's the way the entire black community sees it, I think you're wrong.
Okay.
Hey, Bruce,
you're going to tell
Michael,
me a black man.
Hey, Bruce,
you're going to tell a black man what the black community knows more. So you know more about the black community than me, Bruce?
I didn't say that.
To black people every day. I talk to black people every day. Do you talk to black people every day?
Not every day, no. You talk to white people every day? I mean, it's not a black and white issue.
I have to talk to white people every day. Of course I do.
It's not a black and white issue.
I live in America.
You have – I can
– if I may interject something, Bruce, I think what Michael is saying is that he's speaking just like the majority of persons of color in America feel. That's what Michael is saying. And systemic racism exists. It currently exists. And what Michael is saying is that the majority of the black and Latino population in America feels the very same way he just alluded to.
Well, all right. I don't doubt the feeling at all. And you heard me say that. I don't doubt that at all.
Gentlemen, let me get in. Ron, why don't you jump in and give us your thoughts?
Yeah, it's been very interesting. Obviously, I can't empathize with the way a black person sees it, but I can understand, and I certainly don't disagree with anything Michael said. I think the bottom line for me, at least, is I don't know what percentage of white cops are good, what percentage of white cops are bad. I don't know what percentage of black cops are good or what percentage of black cops are bad. But I think the bottom line, if you really step aside and look at what happened in the cases that have been brought to the limelight, I think if the person being arrested was a white person, we wouldn't have seen what happen. And the other thing too is, now with the cameras, I forget what they're called, the cameras that the cops use, they've got to be on better behavior. Who knows what happened? I mean, David, I guess, is the only one that would know because he's a former police officer. But who knows how many people were brutalized by police officers and nobody ever found out about.
We know. Yeah, we know. The black community, we know. We absolutely know how many were.
I mean, that's the point I'm making.
Your community does it.
That's the point I'm making, Michael, is that there's, there is a problem. And like I said, if the person being arrested was a white person, I don't think it would have escalated and the guy would have been shot in the back like happened in this case. I think we do have a problem. I don't think it's every cop. I don't think anybody believes that, but it needs to be addressed. There is a racism problem that some police officers the unions, I don't disagree that it's probably a good old white boy club. Although on the other hand, I do have to say that, like, here, for example, in Miami, and I don't know this for a fact, but I have seen, like, in the black areas, most of the police officers are black. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just putting that out there.
All right, gentlemen, let me throw in what I got out of that speech from the union, the police union. The one thing I think, if you listen very closely, you'll hear the gentleman say there was only one cop that we think did something wrong. This guy's at the top. And remember me telling you, the guys at the top will, they are the guys who've been there for 20, 30 years. And everything goes at the younger guys coming in. That's where everyone is saying they should be trained. And the guys at the top don't think they need to be trained. And what he said was, it was this one incident. Outside of that one incident, we are all good guys. He did not say one thing about we might need to be trained. We might need to do something different. And he's the union. He should be saying, we understand the community, we should be helping, we should do something about it. But he didn't say that. What he said was, there was only one bad cop, and we don't like that guy. All the rest of us are good, and everybody's putting us down. And so what I got from that is, I don't want to hear what you guys are saying, because you guys are all wrong, and we've got to keep doing what we're doing. That's exactly what he said to the other guy standing behind him. And I think that was probably, and that's why they all applauded. Yeah, we're not going to turn. We're not changing. what that whole thing was about. We're not changing. We don't like it. That's the fact that you keep telling us we're doing wrong. We're not going to do anything different. If you listen,
yeah,
we're
closely, not going
to. That was what.
We're not going to stop shooting black people.
Well, I mean, whatever they're doing all over, they're not changing anything right now. According, and that was New York. That he was the union guy from New York, and I got that. You know, we that guy that it wasn't New York. That one guy in Missouri. That's what he did. He was a bad guy. We hate that one guy because he now has put the pressure on us. So, but we, you know, other than that one guy, we're all good guys. We do our best to help, and this is what we're going to do. We're not changing, and we want everybody to quit telling us we are not good people. So you didn't get in there. I didn't get in that speech anything about there might be some issues we need to deal with, and I would think that would be the kind of speech we would have wanted to hear. What do you think about that there, Bruce?
Well, excuse me. I agree with you that it isn't one officer, and it isn't. It may not be necessarily one color of officer. It could be several different kinds. There is a bad element, protected or otherwise, in too many police departments. But listening to you guys talk, I'm thinking if I was a police chief, what better people to get involved than, like you said, Michael, someone that has firsthand experience. I know we seem to not like the fact that we need to talk about it. You know, we want action, no talk. But you've got to start with dialogue. What better resource than to have than someone that says, I've suffered through this. I'm going to tell you firsthand what's going on so you understand to the best of your ability. Then together we can start backing out of this hole and figuring out a way to solve it. For us just sit here and blame each other and beat up on each other and say it's never going to change, which is what that argument tends to make people think, it's never going to change. And the more I thought about it is, okay, Michael, and if you really feel that way and you've experienced that, which I have not, then talk to me, tell me as a police chief or whatever, how do I fix it in my department? Where do we start? Help me understand. That's the kind of thing we need to do. Wouldn't you agree or not?
Here's the problem. They don't want to back out of it. Bruce, Martin Luther King's been we've been telling them that for years. They know they're the problem. What I just articulated to you, they've already had that articulated to them for years. They don't want to change.
It's
self-explanatory. The problem.
It's already there.
Hey, you know something? You know something, Bruce? It starts by step one. For an alcoholic or a drug addict to admit that he has a problem, first they got to recognize that there is a problem. And a lot of people that are not of color don't even want to listen. You got to listen. You got to listen. Because we're talking about systemic racism that's been allowed to permeate for 400 years. You can't change something that's been happening for 400 years overnight.
No one said it's going to change overnight. You have to start with what all of us feel is a logical way to start. And if your answer is, Don, people have to admit that we have a problem of length, depth, and scope, and then we start trying to figure out a way to solve it. For us to just banter back and forth about it's never going to happen, it's never going to get fixed, is to me is a crappy attitude.
Let me jump in.
No, I'm not saying
blame people for having a crappy attitude.
I'm saying we got to start somewhere. It starts by listening.
Yes.
Wait a minute. Jeremiah, was that you in there? Jeremiah. I thought I heard your voice in there. Go ahead.
Yes, it was. No, I was just saying, like, you know, we have to understand ourselves because sometimes we do have crappy attitudes when it comes to things that we've seen happen time and time again, and you have no you don't think things are going to come through. You don't think things are going to happen. in a way that they need to. So that's why people have crappy attitudes, because you've seen this time and time again. And not only that, it might be racism. We're talking about these police officers that have a Superman mind frame. So sometimes it's not even the race that play an issue. They could beat on someone because they feel like they can do it. They feel like, okay, you make me work, I'm going to show you in different ways. So it's not just a race issue. It's a police issue and a Superman issue, because guess what? Because you have a gun and a badge, you feel like you can mistreat people. You can't talk to people any kind of way because you're used to having authority. You're used to people listening to you. You know what I mean? So it's more to the issue than just that. And also, yeah, we have to recognize the issue, but you can have a police department that come out and say, we're going to work with our officers. If you don't never work with every individual and understand every individual, if they have racist traits or biased traits or whatever their issue is with dealing with people, you still will never get anywhere. Because your chief could say, oh, I'm going to give my officers training. Training still doesn't weed that out of that person. It's ingrained in you already. So just training of how to handle a particular set of minorities is not going to – how to handle it. No, you need to learn how to handle it yourself. Not how to handle them, how to handle yourself. So there's a lot of things that needs to be spoken of.
You know, the one thing that I don't think we're picking up is that the way the police officers handle individuals and communities is the way the total police department handles the community, whereas individual police officer doesn't listen to the person that they're arresting, that they're beating up, or that they're talking to. They really don't listen because they feel they're above that. The police department is not going to sit down and have a conversation with anybody because they feel they're above the community. We are here to monitor you. We are here to make sure you do things right. So me, the chief of police, talking to a group of people in the community, that's not going to happen. And if it does happen, it's an assistant that goes down. So if they're not going to talk to the community, Bruce, how do you plan for get that together? What needs to happen is, once again, is I guess the people that put them in office are politicians or the mayor or something to say, you need to go and do this work in the community. That's not happening. But it's not going to happen if you think we're all going to come to the table with the police chiefs and stuff and things are going to change, because they feel they're above that. They don't. Well, the police department feels that, you know, unless you come to me and bow down, I don't have to do anything with you because I have the law. Whatever I say goes based on rules.
And Dave, also, you got to remember, too, you know, that police chief was once a police officer. He's probably once done these things that his officers are doing, and he has somewhat of an understanding or acceptance to it.
Yep. You're right.
I don't disagree with what you said. There are some deep-seated attitudes, problems that aren't, as Jeremiah said, aren't attached to a skin color throughout the police department. So with you being a police officer, let me ask you a question. I think I know the answer, but what do we start with then? Do we totally tear down the entire police system, get rid of it all and start over? We all know we can't do that. It's got to transition from, if we think there's too much bad in it, to one that's got much more good in it. We can't tear it down and start over. We have to transition. So how do we start transitioning to do things that you gentlemen have just said? I don't disagree with that.
You know, it's the one thing that we've always been
David?
It's something we've all been saying. We have to go and put it and make the vote for the right person. When you hear the politicians talking, no one ever talks to them about, well, what are you going to do about the police departments? Why don't you
right.
willing to do
right.
this? You never ask those questions. When that's the person that puts the chief, that's the person, and then the chief puts all the people in, so it has to start at that level. So you're going to
yep.
have to,
yep.
it is putting people in position to make that happen. That is the only
yep.
way it can happen. It's not going to work from the bottom up. It's going to have to work from the top down, and that's going to be the mayor and everybody answering to the community, because we're asking the questions. We're not telling the people we're putting in office, we want this change. We're just letting it happen.
Right. And we have wonderful police leaders in small communities, large communities, and we have terrible ones. So, yeah, I would agree with that. We got to have the right person that won't tolerate, he or she won't tolerate that from the police officer's answer to them.
Yeah, I think the answer is community policing. I think the answer is community policing. I think
we need some of that. Absolutely.
And here's the problem. Here's the problem with community policing. The people in my community, once again, I grew up in an all-African-American community. Most of the men in my community were taken away from the community at a young age because they were over-policed, meaning those racist cops would come in and take them away to prison and jail and give them felonies. So not a lot of people from my community can be a police officer because they already have a horrible criminal background record.
Let me interject.
The strategy as well.
Let me go ahead. Can I interject you for a second? It happens before that because I've seen situations where the other communities are privileged. Let's just say this: you're a 13-year-old boy. Your football goes across the fence. You jump the fence. You get your football. Just because your neighbor is unhappy that you came into their yard, the police can charge you with burglary because you jumped a fence. You see what I'm saying? So in one community, this child is given a chance. The police officer takes him to his parent, tells his parent what he did wrong, whatever, fine day, everything's okay. In another community, this kid goes to jail. So he has
that's over policing. We're over policing in our community. Absolutely. That's exactly what I was getting at.
Well, not necessarily over, the wrong kind of policing.
Prior to you turning 18. So before you can get a job, you can't get a job. That takes you away from having fear. You can just keep the low level jobs, Walmart, things that accept certain things and you can't get too far, basically.
That's part of the systemic racism. That's exactly what systemic racism is. You go into that black community early, get those young boys early, give them felonies, so now they can't do anything other than entry-level jobs. That's part of systemic racism.
I know you want to move on, David, but I'll just say this really quick and let you move on. But I encourage any listeners to go and Google the Miami Gardens Police. They had officers identifying young males, doing certain things that would probably prohibit a person from being a police officer, a firefighter. They're creating contact cards on kids. And this only happens in a minority community. You know, all this information, just like as if you would get a ticket from the police. So for officers to move up and get on gang units or more proactive policing, they're a patrol officer, but they have to, meet a quota, have certain stats. So these officers were, creating contacts with kids just to build their resume look nice. And you're using kids to do this. Kids. And guess what? That same child that was doing nothing, walking home because they stayed out in the basketball court, playing late when they probably shouldn't have. It's 9:30. Why are you out here? Oh, I'm looking for a black male. You fit the description. And guess what? You create a contact card for that kid, and it puts him in that situation, unfortunately, and that continues to happen. So if he go apply to the police department, they're like, listen, we see that you've been involved in about 30 situations. What's going on here? Are you a bad kid or a good kid? And that kid simply did nothing wrong. But I urge you guys to go look at that. City of Miami Gardens, falsifying arrests, falsifying contact with adults and kids. I'll end it there.
All right. Okay. I think we did a lot of discussion about that. I mean, this is something we'll probably be talking about ongoingly because I think with voting coming up, this is one of the things that we as men have to make sure that we put that message out there, that we need to ask the questions about things that are in our community that are causing these issues. If there are officers causing issues, it should be that we as citizens could go to our elected official and say that particular officer should not be in our area because he's causing these problems. And that politician should be able to go to head up and have a meeting to get that police officer reprimanded or put out of the force or something. But we don't. And most that I've seen, that is not the way it works. So, but that is the way it should go to make, for Bruce's point, how do we get there? That's, I think, how we get there. But I want to move on. I want to talk about, we just hit the worldwide $500,000 deaths from coronavirus today. And it seems that there's this question on opening up, because we seem to be, a lot of people are closed down and they want to make their businesses to survive. They have to sell products and get things done, but we are not allowing that. But so I want to talk about the coronavirus and what are you thinking about? Everyone has to wear masks, and there are all kinds of things going on about these masks, about this kind of mask. And so there's a lot of issues going on right now in this coronavirus thing, but there's this issue with making people successful. I mean, we're putting a lot of people out of business. We're going to have a lot of lines of food lines like they did in the 30s if people can't do things. So Don, I think you wanted to come in with something.
Yeah, we are experiencing overwhelming situations here in South Florida. They just shut the beach down for the 4th of July in Dade County, which is Miami. And then they realized that if they didn't do it in Miami, they would go to Fort Lauderdale, so they just closed Fort Lauderdale down, and they're going to close a lot more beaches down. What that has done, that younger generation, 18 to 49 or 18-34, has had the attitude that I'm untouchable. I can't die. And I was in Naples, Florida last week, and I was walking around Naples, Florida, and that's a very privileged area, well-to-do, uppity, and there was nobody wearing masks. It was crazy. And then we got a leader of the free world, the United States, he doesn't wear a mask, and then he says, stop the testing. Stop the testing. My God. We are in trouble, ladies and gentlemen. We are in trouble.
All right. What about you? Hey, Spencer, you haven't said anything today. Tell us about what your thoughts are.
Well, actually, I was just down there in Dade County, and I guess I kind of left at the right before it really just jumped. Actually, I'm not quarantining, but I'm not going out myself just because I was just down there. And I will have to agree, I don't think the younger crowd had have taken this seriously at all. I think we just thought it was invincible. And then now, as you can see, that most of the cases from 40 and under, 35 and under. And I think they're doing the right thing with shutting down the beaches and everything. Also, in our state, it's rising, but the mortality rate is not as high here in Georgia as it is in other states. But as I was down there, I did see a lot of people wearing masks, not so much here, and I'm still seeing videos of just big block parties here. So even here in Georgia, they're still not, at least the young crowd, still not taking it seriously as it should. And I think the cases are just continuing to rise, as long as our generation is not taking it as serious as other. And there's also, you know, this group that don't want to wear masks. They're saying it's violating their rights. So you also got that to deal with. And it's going to be a problem. As you can see, I think one family, the whole family, or most of the family caught coronavirus, and his dad was on, since they did, was just have the family gathering, small family gathering, but they all caught his dad. And this was in Texas. Did that end up in the ICU? And I'm not sure of his condition right now, but it's just stuff like that keep happening, and I think it's going to continue to happen until we either get a handle on it, like as far as the young generation, to really put in our minds, okay, we can't be going out and doing this because it's serious, and also that other group that don't want to wear masks but continue to go out and you might be asymptomatic and just giving it to all these people. So it's a lot to take in. I'm taking as much precaution as I can while even at work, sanitizing and social distancing the work. But I do think it's going to continue to get worse.
All right. So, Bruce, what are your thoughts on this mask wearing around the virus?
Up here in the Midwest in Michigan, I would echo what I think it was Michael and Spencer and whoever else Don did, that not too many people up here, and it tends to be the youth, aren't wearing masks, social distancing, physical distancing properly. They're not taking it serious. And a couple of things I think that are causing that to happen. I made a prediction. I'll make it again. Once we open up, whatever that means in your community, it's going to be very hard to put the genie back in the bottle. People are not going to want to go, even if they see the statistics, they're not going to want to go back, right or wrong. That's one of the things we have. I think too many people think that, well, it's not about me, and it's an inconvenience. And once we start opening up, it's over. I don't have to practice any of that mumbo jumbo anymore, that inconvenience. I don't have to do it, which is totally wrong. I wear a mask. I do the distance. I even chide people and let them know how I feel about without getting obscene about it, the ones that don't. But the stores here and that, half the people in the stores, they're not wearing them. And we're in for a rude awakening if we don't take this serious.
I have a question. David, I have a question I want to throw out. We're looking to find a vaccine. And even when we do find a vaccine, it's going to solve the problem. Because finding a vaccine is one thing, and then finding the right vaccine is another thing. And then to make sure we find the right vaccine, some people have got to take a placebo. So we've got a long way to go in this process. And we might even have to shut this thing down again. And a lot of people, like Bruce says, they don't want to put the genie back in the bottle. But let me tell you something. We might have to shut it down again. It's not about economics. It's about health.
Don, do you think, if that's really a scenario in a part of the country or countrywide, do you think that can happen, that can be achieved again?
No, because you know why, Bruce?
I don't either. I don't either.
For the love of money is the root of all evil.
Whatever your reasons are, you won't be able to shut it down again, not in the way we did the first time. It's not going to happen.
No, we won't. I agree.
All right.
Let me add one more little tidbit. So, David and Don and the rest of my brothers there, do we need to do a much better, education? Even though a lot of youth or certain groups ignore it anyway, do we need to pile on much more education on the airwaves as to reasons why, consequences, blah, 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 some way to make it register in more people's minds?
Yes, we do. And another thing, we need a change in November because we need to listen to the medical association. This is only the end of the first phase. We're not even in the second phase yet.
Yeah, that's what they say.
Come
whatever
on.
That is. Whatever that is.
And see, the current administration, I hate to keep barking on this, but they have totally walked away from this pandemic and their focus on reelection. That's it.
I have a person on the line that wants to jump in. I think you, sir, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, very good. Hey, first of all, thank you for this platform. I have been listening intermittently for a while, so I just want to give you kudos for your guests, your host, and maintaining such a vehicle. I just wanted to chime in regarding the pandemic and the actual virus itself. And the one thing that is not seemingly conveyed to the masses as it relates to viruses and the characteristics thereof. You can do your research, talk to any specialist in disease and pandemic, but when you look at the virus itself, I know as of even March timeframe, April timeframe, this virus had mutated 40 plus times. Now, if you don't understand what that means, it means that it evolves given particular hosts, the particular areas, and you cannot attack one strain the same way you attack another. Now, if you understand how the flu vaccines work, and if you talk to specialists, and again, do your own research because this is public knowledge, that most vaccines only really cover about 10% of the actual strain that may be apparent in a particular area. And so for those of you who do take flu shots every year or have, as even myself, I've had flu shots and still gotten the flu. And the reason for that relates to, again, the issue of the strain and how it mutates and evolves. So even if they come up with a vaccine, which I guarantee you won't happen this year, that it may only impact less than 10% of the population. Meanwhile, this thing is still mutating given different areas. Some of the if you look at the spectrum of varieties, for instance, a strain in Hong Kong might be different than a strain in U.S. or in Italy or in other countries. And so they're going to have to do more than just placebos to really make something that has an efficacy that's going to be substantial in that. That's one of the reasons why I feel like, given the contagion itself and the way this thing acts, that it's going to be extremely hard. And we're going to be living this lifestyle for even more time than we can even imagine. And that's the point I want to make regarding that.
Mr. Right. Caller, what's your best guess, your feeling on how long we're going to live this new normal or masks and this kind of immediate safe practices?
You know, it's really hard to say. And obviously, you know, I think there is a number of different impetuses used by different people that influence the response. Whatever we do, it has to be consistent across the board, right? And yet, you got people with great influence that are creating a political posture for something that has to do with your health. And you have an organization that knows more about the actual virus saying something totally different. I don't think I need to mention any names. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia, and I drove up to Tennessee for a few days. And I did it strategically because I can manage my environment because anything we did was outside. And I'll tell you, the majority of the people were not wearing masks. They weren't doing social distancing. And what I'm finding is that for some odd reason, and I don't know their incentive for wearing it or not, but what I'm finding is that it's almost like a psychological issue. Like for me, I would wear my mask and I would walk up to a person and I would profess, I'm doing social distancing, I'll make sure they know. And in that case, it's like they put it on. They don't want to be seen. Like if you're in a majority, if you're in a group where most of the people wearing masks, then it seems to be more incentive for a person to wear a mask. It doesn't make sense to me because we're talking about protecting themselves and hopefully someone else. But for the most part, when people are in a big group that are not wearing masks, it seems to be easier not to wear it. It becomes this sole psychological isolation. I'm making a statement that goes against social decorum. I mean, it's crazy. I even met some relatives And when I first saw them, they didn't have masks, and I had mine on. I said, hey, look, I'm protecting you. I'm protecting me. Well, guess what they did? They had it. Well, I got my mask, but, you know, I had it in my car, and they went and got it. You know, it's almost like you have to push the agenda. So I guess to make a long story short, just like the professionals are saying in CDC's why they're having to close things down, if we don't get a consistent response, you're going to always have this waffling of spiking up and down and reacting, right? I mean, there's a place, and I believe it was, somewhat, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe it was somewhere like Sweden or somewhere like that, or an area where they completely, there were zero records of anyone having the virus because they actually implemented it. Now, I'm sure they were much smaller per capita than, say, the U.S., but it goes to show you that model works. So why are we not doing it? Why are we not as a nation? That's the question. So having said that, no one knows. But given that, along with the characteristic of the virus itself, I really feel like it's going to be a lot longer than we even anticipate.
All right, thank you, sir. You want to handle? You want to go ahead, Bruce?
Thank you. You're welcome to listen long as we'd like you to, and thank you for raising questions. This is what we encourage. We want dialogue from other perspectives. And I still think, I'll just add one more thing. I don't know if you guys agree or not. I think a lot of people that do wear masks think that they're protecting themselves, not others. And I've told people that over and over again. That's not what the health department says. You're protecting others from you spreading it, in case you don't know. But I think a lot of people think they're protecting themselves from others by wearing the mask.
Hey, let me weigh in real quick, David. This is Michael. I live out in California on the West Coast, which, you know, of course, is the best coast. And everyone wears a mask out here. Like, I don't have that problem. Everywhere I go, someone has
really?
A mask for it. Yes, they really? Take it very seriously out here. Everyone's
good.
Wearing a mask in California, and everyone's social distancing. And that's because we have a liberal governor, Gavin Newsom, who knows what he's doing.
You have great, Michael, you have great leadership in California.
Oh,
yes,
please,
we have great leadership
please.
In California.
Please.
We have liberal
you gotta always
leadership.
Take it political.
Because the states you named, Florida and Texas, all the states where it's spiking are the conservative states. Donald
well,
Trump doesn't
I
wear
that,
a mask.
I said that Nunes is concerned with health opposed to economics. That's what I said.
And some people are saying all the states that are having police problems, blue. So figure that, you know, neither one of those scenarios are correct, probably.
Well, like the caller just said a few moments ago, it's about health. It's not
yeah.
about economics. It's about
and
health.
It's not
about
politics either.
It's not about politics, not about money. It's about health. And we've got the whole thing wrong. We've got to focus on the health issues that are facing our people in the world today.
All right, gentlemen. I have something, you know, and I just hate it in this world that we live in that they give us the opportunity to have the conversation that I'm about to say. Because it's so amazing to me. One of the countries that is having the least amount in certain areas of cases is Africa, especially South Africa. But Oxford University has come up with a vaccine. And so why is it every time that these universities have come up with vaccines, they head to Africa for testing? So they're down in Johannesburg with this vaccine that Oxford came up with that think that might be the vaccine, and they go straight to Africa to test people down there. And right now, that's where the least amount of testing, I mean, the least amount of cases are coming from. And
well,
I just...
David, that's a great sample market. That's what it is. It's a great sample market. Be realistic about it.
When you say sample market, are you saying we are samples?
That's what exactly what I'm saying. It's a sample market. It's a sample market where I can test and find out if it will work or not. Even with shooting people up with the virus, and then giving some placebos when we find a cure, a so-called cure. Some people are going to take it, and then some of them are going to take placebos. It's going to be a while before we find the right cure.
Right, but you know, when they were doing samples of AIDS, where did they go? They went to Africa to test in Africa. Well, why is Africa a testing center for the
world? I know exactly why they go to Africa. They go to Africa because in their mind, black lives don't matter. That's exactly why they go test them on Africa.
And any science experiment, guinea pigs are dispensable.
Wow.
So that's it. The other aspect to this, too, that even makes that more clear is that if you talk again to any pandemic or disease specialist, there is an extreme amount of care that needs to be taken because a vaccine can kill you if it's not tested properly, if it's not developed properly. See, they don't say that either. There has to be an inordinate amount of work to ensure that whatever they come up with doesn't kill you. It isn't like just putting a bunch of stuff together. Oh, let's try this. No. So why wouldn't they go to Africa?
It's just crazy that the world is using Africa as a guinea pig for everything.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's my belief.
And then we just got billions of dollars released to companies that can find a vaccine before the end of the year. Billions of dollars have been released.
Wow. All right, gentlemen, we only got like 2 minutes left in the show. Anybody got anything hot on their tongue that they want to bring up? This is the time to do it. If not, I have a question. I mean, this question is, do you think that women or people who call police and make false claims should be fined or go to jail? There seems to be a lot of that going on right now where people are calling the police for people walking on their grass or some craziness right now.
We need a Karen's law. It's called Karen's law. They need to pass Karen's law and Karen needs to go to jail.
Yeah, Karen. But Karen is a specific person. Karen is a Caucasian female, right? That's why that's Karen law, because there seems to be a great deal of white females calling on black people and things that don't make any sense. Like, and one of the things I was really annoyed with was watching the police wrestle this little boy down for selling water on the corner, finding young people out making money rather than out in what they think they're doing, robbing, stealing, was silly. They should be out doing those kinds of things. So people who are doing these kinds of things are just crazy. But do you think that women make, and there seems to be a lot of them caught, because it's in the news all the time, these people, Karen, calling about, you know, there was a lady sitting in a university, and she was sitting in the hallway, and they called police on her. Don, what are your thoughts? Do you think should be fine?
I think that's asinine. I'm going to leave it like that, asinine.
Yeah, I think we all think it's asinine, but the question is, do you think people should be fined or should they get a ticket for that? Should that be? I think just the other half of us trusting the police, I think the answer would be yes. But, okay, so we'd like to thank all the people who are listening out here who called in that we will be back here again. We won't be here next week. Next week is supposed to be the weekend. So we will see you a week after the 4th of July. Afterwards. So guys, my whole thing is hope you have fun with your families and our listening audience. Please go out and have fun and enjoy as best you can the world as it is now. You guys?
You guys have a great holiday weekend. And if you go out to the Mount Rushmore, make sure nobody tears it down.
Right, because Trump will get your name if you do. All right. Have a nice weekend, guys. Have a nice
weekend.
You
too. Take care.
You guys stay safe. Stay safe.
You too. Stay safe down there in Miami land.
Thank you.